You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas basketball back in action tonight over at Bud Walton Arena. We'll preview it on the show with Anthony Christensen. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Basketball back at Bud Walton Arena tonight, 7 o'clock tip-off between Razorback and the Razorbacks and Winthrop. I messed that up because I keep wanting to say Lipscomb. I'm on this Lipscomb kick because I guess because of Lenny Acuff and he came here with Samford last weekend, and I don't know why I just keep going back to Lipscomb. They're not playing
Lipscomb. 2 years in a row they played Lipscomb. And
they're playing Winthrop tonight, the Eagles.
The Eagles, yep.
Good job. 2-2.
Yeah, 2-2. Dalen Berry's really good. I've only been able to watch one Winthrop game this season. I'll be upfront about that. I haven't watched any of the other games, but they played the first game of the season against Queens, and Dalen Berry was awesome. So I'm excited to watch him play.
I noticed they played a homecoming game the other day. I don't know what I've never seen a college basketball team have a homecoming game.
Oh, I have.
Where, really?
That's because, yeah, I mean, there's no football at Southern Indiana or Evansville, so they play their
homecoming game. Is there football at Winthrop? Game.
I have no idea, to be honest
with
you.
We're going to look this up. Go ahead. Tell us about basketball homecoming.
I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's not as big as football homecoming. I mean, given I went to an SEC school. Now I cover an SEC school, and obviously homecoming is going to be a football thing at the big schools that have football. So, yeah.
There is no football at Winthrop. I just assumed
thinking maybe there's going to be FCS, but nope.
Well, and this was going to say, I kind of assumed the fact they're in South Carolina. I mean, that's anywhere in the South. That's football country. Yeah, I just figured they might have football there, but no, they don't have football. So that makes more sense.
There we go.
So they won their homecoming game.
Happy homecoming.
So there's that.
Go Eagles.
I
can't say go Eagles because I'm a neutral reporter, but good job on them for winning their homecoming game. My bad.
I want to go back to last Friday. Arkansas beat Samford 79-75. Is there concern about the Razorbacks after that game?
I am higher on Samford than most people are. I think Lenny Acuff is a really, really good coach. I think that's a team that can compete in the SoCon. That being said, if there's any concern for me as if you're asking me to put on some red tinted glasses and say where are you most concerned, I would say rebounding. We've talked about it a bit already, but you know, Arkansas, I believe, if I'm not mistaken and I remember correctly, is the 72nd tallest team by average height in the country. Samford is the 16th shortest team by average height in the country, and Arkansas out-rebounded Samford by one. And the offensive rebounds were even, if I'm not mistaken. It was 9-9. I don't have the stats right in front of me, so I might be slightly mistaken. But Arkansas, that needs to be better against a team that you have, you know, a size and athleticism advantage over, and especially your two big guys in Nick Pringle and Malik Ewan, they combine for 2 points and one rebound. So, I mean, that I think is a concern. And, you know, John Calipari talked about it after the game and talked about how, you know, he's going to coach those guys up and try to, you know, fix that. And he talked about on the radio show last night, he talked about how they, you know, had a really good film session and a really good practice afterwards. So, you know, maybe I would assume that's something that they focused on quite a bit. But if you're asking me for one area of concern for Arkansas, I do think it's the rebounding, which is similar to what it was last season, which is, you know, they went out into the portal and they got two guys who, you know, averaged good rebounding numbers last year at South Carolina and Florida State. And, you know, so far this season, there's still some stuff to be desired, but it is still early. That's why you play some of these games, especially, you know, Samford is a, like I said, a team I'm higher on than I think most people are. But yeah, I think that's why you play some of these games, and that's why you learn, and that's where you see it come up.
Arkansas did out-rebound Samford by one, 38-37. Both of them had nine offensive rebounds. Samford had more second choice or second chance points than Arkansas had during that game. And that's really, what now, three games in a row where the second chance points have been?
I believe that's correct.
Kind of a stat that alarms you a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I believe that is the case. I don't remember exactly what it was against Central Arkansas, but I believe that is correct, yeah.
I think UCA outscored Arkansas on second chance points, or at least they had a number of second chance points that certainly stood out on the box score. I don't have that box score right in front of me.
Yeah, no. So, like I said, that's why you play these early games. You iron out some of the
UCA outscored the Arkansas 16-10 in second chance points.
There we go. But yeah, that's why you play some of these games. You iron out the kinks and you see, you know, where you need to improve. I know, you know, like I keep going back to, Samford's a team that I think is better than a lot of people will give them credit for. Not to say they're going to be like, you know, an at-large tournament team by any means. I don't believe that's going to be the case, but I think they can compete in the SoCon and do that. But yeah, I think that's the big thing that you want to take away from games like this is, you know, this is what we need to get better at before we go and play, you know, Duke on Thanksgiving, Houston, Texas Tech, and the SEC.
What do you think about what they're getting from Malik Ewan right now inside? Because it seems like the reputation was that they would be getting more from him than what the results have actually been to this point.
I think it's an interesting thing to look at. I think Malik Ewan, he would be doing a lot better if the offense ran through him, which is what they did at Florida State last year. But I don't think Arkansas would be better if the offense flowed through him, if that makes sense. I think there has to be some sort of balance there. And I think we've seen some flashes of it. I think we've seen, you know, some of that passing ability. We've seen his ability as a ball handler. You know, he's brought the ball up the floor a couple of times and, you know, has looked good in doing so. But, you know, when you look at, you know, the last game especially, there's more to be desired, I think. What the answer is exactly, I'm not sure. I mean, there are obviously people who know a lot more about basketball than I do that are, you know, working on figuring that out. But yeah, I think there's a lot more to be desired. And, you know, like I said, last year at Florida State, a lot of the offense went through him and he was the focal point of the offense. And right now, I mean, that's obviously not the case with him in Arkansas. So how do you find that balance to get the best out of Malik Ewan while also not, you know, making him too much of a focal point and taking away from, you know, Darius Acuff and Malik Thomas, who have been, you know, so good so far this season? I think that's the biggest area of, I don't want to say concern just because it is still so early in the season, but, you know, with him, I think that's the biggest, I guess, question mark.
Arkansas ranked 21st again this week in the AP poll. You're an AP voter. Where do you have them and how do they stack up right now against some of the other teams?
Yeah, I put them at 20 on my ballot, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it was. Let me pull it. Yeah, I've got it up. Yeah, I had them.
You don't
20.
Want to mistake about an or misspeak about an AP ballot. People will not let you hear the end of that.
No. So I put Arkansas at 20, and you know it's a bit of a mixture. I think I had them 17 or so last week, if I remember correctly. You know, it's a little bit of a mixture between, you know, them, you know, and they didn't play well against Samford. I know I keep talking up Samford, you know, a lot, but they also didn't play all that well. They let Samford come back into the game when they really probably shouldn't have and some things like that. So it's a little bit of a mixture of that and some other teams picking up some good wins that led me to move Arkansas down a little bit. You know, so that's kind of, you know, where I stand right now. I mean, Gonzaga is beating teams by 700 points, so I don't think you can keep them down there that long. I moved Gonzaga up to 11. You know, so yeah, I think that's kind of where I stand right now.
This matchup tonight, I mean, Arkansas is going to be favored to win. I don't. Mm-hmm. The line score is the betting line is what?
I think it's 19.5.
Pretty big, pretty big betting line. So they're expected to win, and so I think that in games like this, it's number one, don't lose.
Yeah.
But number two, you really start looking for improvement in certain areas from past games. Mm-hmm. Offensive rebounding would certainly be one that you look for tonight. What else?
I think Yeah, I their distribution has been good, I think, for the most part. I don't remember the numbers exactly, but I mean, Malik Thomas has, you know, got really good assist numbers, as does, I believe, Darius Acuff as well. You know, I know John Calipari wants him to get up to 10 and
he had five the other night.
Yeah, so not
I think I mean, five nothing, and six in his last two games.
Yeah, which it's not anything to scoff at. But you look at Winthrop's defense. Winthrop's defense, you know, forces a decent amount of turnovers. And they also don't, you know, turn the ball over all that much. So I think defensively, I think if you can speed them up and get them to turn the ball over, I think that would be a good sign. Because So I think that's one area. Obviously, the rebounding is. You know, a big thing as well. So I think those are the big things that I'm kind of looking for. And then offensively, I think I want to see them do better, you know, getting the ball inside and, you know, getting more out of their big guys just from, you know, a scoring perspective. Right now in 2-point shooting, they're number 96 in the country, which, you know, if you're, you know, that's not great. You know, you want to get those guys going some more. And I think, you know, these are the games that you need them to do that. You know, Winthrop and Jackson State coming up after this one. You know, those are teams that you should beat. Like, no disrespect to them, but you know, you should beat them and you should be able to, you know, get the ball inside and get those guys going. And, you know, not just in a scoring sense, but also, yeah, you know, from a rebounding perspective as well. But I think I would like to see Arkansas force more turnovers. Arkansas's turnover defense is number 309 in the country right now. So you want to see that get better. And if they can do that against a team that doesn't turn the ball over a lot in Winthrop, you know, that's you know, a good sign, I think.
If you're watching or you're listening, do us a favor, if you would. Make sure you're subscribed to our podcast. You can do it on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you're watching or listening to this. If you just check and see if you're subscribed, that would help us. We'd appreciate it. Leave us a comment if you want to. Leave us a review. Any of that would certainly help our podcast, and we appreciate that in advance. I wanted to shift gears here for a minute and talk about something I ran across this morning. I sent you this story about the Maui Invitational. This was an article from a website that I actually like a lot. It's called awfulannouncing.com, which is actually a website that's devoted to good announcing. They just call it awful announcing. It's don't ask why. But they also deal with like some just media in general, television rights and things of that sort. One of the things they wrote about this morning, the headline says, the Maui Invitational is on life support as a prestigious tournament. They go into talking about ESPN and you know, basically how they're having trouble getting teams to go participate in the Maui Invitational, that the, you know, the list of teams just is not very good, not only this year, but next year too. For instance, they say there's only one ranked team this year. That's North Carolina State. This starts next week, by the way. NC State, the other teams are Seton Hall, SC with Eric Musselman will be there, Boise State, Washington State. Chaminade is in every other year. They're the Division II host that they used to be every year. Now it's every other year that they host this, so they'll be part of it this year. They won't be part of it next year. Arizona State and Texas, those are the teams. So NC State, Seton Hall, Southern Cal, Boise State, Washington State, Chaminade, Arizona State, and Texas are this year's teams. They list next year's teams. Here we go. It's Arizona, BYU, Ole Miss, Clemson, Colorado State, Providence, VCU, and Washington. Now, why am I mentioning this? It's because Arkansas is, as of now, under contract to go to the Maui Invitational in 2027, in November of 27. So not next year, but the season after next. Arkansas is under contract to go to the Maui Invitational. I have long held here that I am skeptical about whether or not that's going to happen. It is something that was set up by Eric Musselman. He leaves. Calipari comes in. Calipari, very famously at Kentucky, said he didn't like going to the Maui Invitational, didn't like what that schedule did to his team's schedule early in the season, never took Kentucky back to that, never took Kentucky to the Battle for Atlantis. Scheduled at Kentucky very comparably to what he does here at Arkansas, which is a lot of one-off type neutral site matchups, like you'll see with Duke in Chicago this year, or Houston in Newark or Texas Tech in Dallas. Those are the type of games that that they schedule. He was part of the group of coaches, along with Krzyzewski and Izzo and Roy Williams, who came up with the Champions Classic, which is going to be played tonight between those four teams, Michigan,
two UNC. Really good games.
Yeah, Michigan, they're the only two games tonight where it's top 25, I guess top 25, but you got KU against Duke and you got Michigan State.
Intrigued to see how KU does
against North Carolina.
Darren Peterson against a good team, but yeah, we'll see.
I mean, the point being, that's how Calipari schedules. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go into this a little bit because, you know, like for me, Maui, the Maui Invitational, that's one of those events you look forward to every year where, you know, it's Tuesday afternoon and it's 2 o'clock and you're seeing Rodney Clark hit a 30-foot shot for Butler to beat, you know, somebody in the middle of the afternoon. Like, it's just a lot of fun to watch those type of games. Same thing would go for the Battle for Atlantis, where Arkansas went to a couple of years ago. I guess what is making – I think there's two things that are working against Maui. Number one is that for very few of the last several years, the games have actually been played in Maui. Mm-hmm. You had COVID, so for 2 years, nobody went out to Maui and played games. I think it was in Vegas 1 year. I think it was in Asheville, North Carolina 1 year. And then there was the wildfire in Maui where all of the games were moved over to Honolulu for a year. And so there have been very few games actually played in Maui when Arkansas went over there.
I believe last year's was the first in Maui for quite some time.
Well, it was the second since COVID. Because when Arkansas went over there in like November of 22, that was the first time that the tournament had been on the island in 3 years. But then the other thing that's working against them are these tournaments, like the Players Era tournament in Las Vegas, which helped me understand this, but I think the teams that participate in the Players Era, so this year it's Houston, Michigan, Alabama, St. John's, Iowa State, Auburn, and Kansas. That reads like a Sweet 16 weekend in the NCAA tournament. It's like a huge pot of money that not only goes to the winning team, but other teams that compete in that tournament too. And so I wonder if you're Maui or if you're the Battle for Atlantis or you're one of these other tournaments that has, you know, kind of found your footing here on Thanksgiving weekend, are you able to maybe mix that model that you've had with this new model and save your tournament? Because it just seems like, you know, these tournaments that we've been so used to being on and part of our Thanksgiving weekends, they may be in some serious jeopardy.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to do it. I mean, there's a reason I'm not nobody's coming to me to ask for my advice on
I'm here on I'm asking right now
on you know, solving these issues and everything. But you know, Maui and Bahamar and Battle for Atlanta, it's, you know, and all that stuff, you know, I mean, it's special, right? I mean, you know, I've never been to the Maui Invitational, but you know, growing up a college basketball fan, sometimes, you know, the best memories you have are you know, turning on the TV at like 10 a.m. and watching UConn versus Memphis. You know, so it's sad. You know, I love Maui and everything, and you know, would love to, you know, go there to cover the event in a couple of years. John Calipari, stay in the event, please. We'll see how that goes, but yeah, you know, I think there has to be some sort of, you know, blending of that. I mean, I read a story, I think last year, a couple of years ago or something like that, just, you know, with Maui, it's really expensive for the schools to get out there and do all of that. But, you know, there probably does have to be some sort of mixture of, you know, what Maui is now and, you know, what the current landscape kind of, I guess, requires for some of these bigger brand schools to go out there and, you know, to compete in these events, because you need to raise money for your rosters and for revenue sharing and NIL and all of that. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't begrudge any of the schools for, you know, selecting or deciding to go to Players Era, because they need to do that, right? They need to get the money for recruiting and all of that. So yeah, it's, you know, it's a tough position to be in, and I'm not sure exactly how you navigate it, but yeah.
You know, there's a lot of these tournaments that have gone by the wayside. In Arkansas, they went out to the Rainbow Classic the year after they won the national championship.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, well, I do. Actually do. But the, you know, that one's gone. I mean, there's no more Rainbow Classic anymore, I don't think. The Great Alaska Shootout was one that was real big in, I think it was Anchorage. It's gone. There was the Top of the World Classic in Alaska that was a big deal at one point in time. It's, you know, I mean, that's no more. So, you know, these type of events, they do come and go. And I mean, the Battle for Atlantis, for instance, nobody had ever heard of the Battle for Atlantis probably 15 years ago. And, you know, it became kind of a big deal in a hurry. So that kind of shows you how these things can change. But I think what was the selling point of these tournaments a long time ago, and really not that long ago, was the experience. It was, hey, you're going to get to go out to Maui. You're going to get to go to Honolulu. You're going to get to go experience Alaska for 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, whatever the case might be. And the experience has been, you know, it's – the experience is nice, but I think for the players, they're much more – like everything else, you just follow the money. And it's, you know, if it's very money-driven. It's, hey, you know, I you know what I could do? I could go get – $2 million for playing in this Players Era Classic, and I don't know what the number is, but let's just throw an arbitrary number out there. So say you get $500,000, $500,000 per player for finishing whatever in this Players Era Classic. I could use some of that on a vacation to Maui once the season ends, so I could get the best of both worlds, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said earlier, I don't begrudge anybody for, you know, holding those views, because I mean, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to, you know, to capitalize on an opportunity like that? Yeah, so there's got to be some sort of, I guess, balancing act. I don't know how it comes together. Just because, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to see Maui go away. I don't think anybody wants to see Atlantis go away. It's just tough for, you know, schools and players and coaches to pass up the opportunity to go and, you know, earn that money that can go into their rosters, that can go into their recruiting and all that, which is obviously extremely important, you know, in modern college athletics, not just college basketball. But I mean, yeah, it's, you know, these events that have been going on for, you know, forever, you know, for as long as I can remember, you know, there's something special about turning on the TV and watching, you know, Auburn and UConn play, you know, in a gym that seats 1,000 people, and you know, it's fun. So I hope there's some way to balance it, because yeah, I mean, Maui is incredibly special, and I do think there's still tangible benefits from it. I mean, Auburn, if I'm not mistaken, won the event last year or finished second in the event.
And Dan Hurley darn near lost his mind out there last year.
Oh, yes,
remember that? They went 0-3, and he said that we'll never do an event like this again. They lost to Memphis, Colorado, and Dayton back-to-back-to-back. And he said, we're never doing this again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember listening to, I think KU and Duke played in Las Vegas last year, just a one-off game. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to Bill Self before that game, and he was talking, and it was during that same time where, you know, Hurley had lost his mind that week, because that seems like it's a weekly occurrence with him. But he, you know, and Bill Self said, yeah, this is something that we as coaches talk about, that it may be better off for us to go and just go on a two-day trip somewhere and get a game in, and, you know, maybe not spend as much money to go out to Maui as it would be to, you know, do the opposite of it. So it's certainly something, and the way Calipari schedules, it's clear that he thinks this way. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, there's a very clear pattern of how he puts his schedule together, where those one-off neutral site games are what he prefers.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And they're pretty, and I think they're pretty lucrative too in terms of, you know, financials. I don't know what Arkansas and Duke are getting out of that game on Thanksgiving at the United Center, but I bet it's a pretty nice
penny. Yeah. So I mean, like I said, you know, there's reasons that, you know, these schools are opting for these different, I guess, options. You know, so, but I was saying, I do think there's still, you know, a benefit to, you know, going and, you know, having, you know, that experience in Maui, or doing the, you know, just doing, you know, whatever in Atlantis, and, you know, having that time to, you know, grow as a team and, you know, play against really high level competition. I mean, Auburn went and won Maui last year and, you know, went to the Final Four. So, you know, I think there's tangible, and, you know, maybe that happens without going to Maui, but, you know,
Maui's
maybe not, but it's I do think that there's still tangible benefits to doing all of that.
Maui's got to
big, yeah.
They've got to get a good field out there. I think moving forward, I think I read where Marquette may be going there in 27. I think that may be right. But, you know, let's take Ole Miss out of this next year in 26 and say you drop Arkansas in this. Arizona, BYU, Clemson, Colorado State, Providence, VCU, Washington. How many of those teams would you really want to fly several thousand miles away and play those games? Maybe Arizona?
Hold on. Wait. Read it to me again.
Arizona, BYU, Clemson, Colorado State, Providence, VCU, and Washington.
All right, Washington, Danny Sprinkle, I think, is doing a good job building that program back up. So I think you could make an argument there. BYU's
they're good this year. Are they going to be good after they lose their guy?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're set up to have consistent success. I think Kevin Young's doing a really good job building that program up. I mean, they've got a lot of experience.
But can I say something here? You are a basketball nerd. And yeah. I mean this very – I'm not trying to say this begrudgingly. Mm-hmm. Like, you see these teams for what they really are. Mm-hmm. The casual viewer who ESPN is really counting on mm-hmm. to keep this tournament afloat, they see BYU against Washington like, you know, who cares? Mm-hmm. That doesn't do anything for me. You got to have some bigger names in here, I think, yeah. to keep this thing afloat. And yeah, I would even say a bigger name than Arkansas. Calipari is a big name, mm-hmm. no doubt, but that can't be your only big name in that tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
Same thing goes for Marquette. Marquette's a great basketball program, mm-hmm. but unless you're really down in the weeds of college basketball, how many people really know that Marquette is as good as they've been?
Yeah, I mean, they're consistently good. I mean, they're not going to this year, at least not yet, but I think that roster could turn it around and be good. But,
yeah, as this story says, you need Duke, you need North Carolina, Michigan State, Kentucky, UConn, Kansas, Indiana, UCLA, Villanova. You need those type of teams. Mm-hmm. Last year alone, they had North Carolina, UConn, and Michigan State there. Mm-hmm. That's what's always made Maui great, is that you got two or three big-time blue bloods there. That's what they're missing right now. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what Arkansas does with this. But
stay in it.
I'm not holding my breath that Arkansas is going to stay
I'm not either, but you know what? We believe in the power of prayer on this show. So
we'll see. Anthony, thanks for being here. When we come back, Christina Long will join me here. We'll talk some Razorback football, but first a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Christina Long is in here in studio. I want to talk about this Arkansas-Missouri game time thing here real quick, because when we were recording yesterday, I was still kind of in the process of gathering a little bit of information about this, and now I've got it. Arkansas-Missouri at the beginning of the season was announced it was going to be a night game. And then yesterday, as they typically do 12 days before kickoff, the SEC says that this is going to be a 2:30 p.m. kickoff on SEC Network. And at first, like, this is kind of strange. So I checked with the SEC, and basically what happened, according to one of their spokesmen, is that ESPN came in with a request that asked Arkansas and Missouri if they would move their night game to the afternoon, and both schools said, okay. So why is this a big deal? It probably isn't, but I do think that there is a little bit of a big deal kind of underlining here. Arkansas doesn't get a night game this year at home, and it's the first time that they have not had a night game in Fayetteville since 1996. It's the first time that they have not had a night game at either of their home stadiums since 1994, so 31 years they haven't had a night game. Now, just full disclosure, I hate night games, and it has nothing to do with, well, I'm just, in case anybody's listening for the first time, I don't like night games. So for me to be advocating for a night game here, this is me advocating for the fan, not for me, because, and I'll tell you why, it's just the line of work that we're in. I'm usually working about 5 hours after the game ends. So if a game ends at 10 o'clock at night, you do the math. I'm like a raccoon up in the morning, you know, scrummaging around looking for scrummaging. Is that a word? Just made it up.
Scrummaging?
Yeah. I don't think it is. Could be. That's what raccoons do, right? I'm looking for food. I'm looking for sugar, caffeine, something to keep me awake at 2 o'clock so I can continue to work. So I'd much prefer a game to be at 11 o'clock in the morning so I can get to bed at a decent hour. But I do think it's unfortunate that they don't have a night game, because I know how much it means to people to not have a night game. And I just don't understand, you know, unless there's some sort of concession there that we don't know what it is. If you're Arkansas, why would you agree to give away your one night game? Now, I know it's the end of the year. It's a bad season. It's going to be cold, all this, yada, yada. But it is something I think, don't put out before the season, you know, one of these five different press releases we have to write about one game. And I mean, literally, think about this, Christina. Every game on the schedule, we have to report on when that game is going to be played at least 4 to 5 times.
My favorite was when we had the like 2:30, they announced the tweet, and it was the graphic, and it was the most crowded graphic you've ever seen. It was like 2:30 or 6 or 6:30. Yeah.
Or next year. But like, you know, and seriously, first there's the announcement of the opponents. Mm-hmm. That usually comes in like September. And then there's the announcement of the opponent's dates, okay? And then in the summertime, usually around the time of SEC spring meetings, so I guess it'd be spring, late spring, there's the announcement of select games. And then there is the, okay, these are all the other broadcast windows. And then you get 12 days out, and it's most of the time, here's what time your game's going to be. But it could be this time or this time, and it could be that network or this network. Or sometimes it's going to be, hey, we're going to wait till the games end this week, and then we're going to tell you in 6 days. And so we're going to put out another announcement at that point in time. And so literally, you write about one game and when it's going to be played like 5 times before it's ever played.
Lose track of what we know at what point in the year, like all the time.
We don't know anything.
Like, I sent a couple emails recently because we set our magazine schedule based on when the games are going to be. And I sent a whole email being like, hey, we need to figure out the schedule. And then I was like, actually, psych, we can't figure out the schedule because we don't know what games are when.
We think they're going to announce it in December, but we're not sure. Maybe they'll just have a special telling us when they're going to have a special in
they
December.
They usually do, mid-December.
I don't know where I was going with this. But why? Oh, I do know. Why do you announce these game times before the season if you're just going to change it?
I didn't know they could change them. Like, I didn't know either. The ones that were already, you know, the rare, this is a rarity that, you know,
ESPN can do whatever it wants to.
Yeah.
That is very clear.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I as far as why Arkansas would agree to it, I have no idea. I don't know if they get any kind of incentive for that.
I don't know either.
I guess there's not really a strong reason to say no.
I just, in 2025, there's no reason you shouldn't be playing a night game.
Yeah.
There really isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you know how big that is to your fan base.
Yeah.
It's such a big deal to LSU. Did you see the stat during the game the other day? LSU, in its entire history of Tiger Stadium, they had played 17 games before noon in 102 years.
That's crazy.
Arkansas has played 18 before noon at Razorback Stadium since 2017. So, I mean, you know, it's a big deal there. And there's a whole story. There's a whole backstory about why it's such a big deal at LSU to play night games. They got lights when people didn't have lights at football stadiums. It allowed the farmers to be able to work their fields during the day and then drive down and go to a game at night. That was one of the original reasons that they had lights there. So it's a very personal thing, or it's a very deeply rooted thing in Louisiana to have their night games. But it does seem like the SEC very much plays favorites and says, hey, you know, we're going to give you what you like to have. But, you know, when you're down the totem pole, enjoy your 11 o'clock breakfast at the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. I think night games are cool. I don't like having a lot of them in a season because of, like you said, just like our work reasons.
You get to a certain age and it not only ruins that day, it ruins the next day and typically the Monday. Especially when you have kids, because they don't they don't care that you are up working until 3 or 3:30 in the morning.
They have no concept of...
Hey, Dad, 7. Yeah. I'm hungry. Okay, I'm up.
Yeah. And I'm up all day. I'm glad this weekend is an afternoon kick, since I'm making that trip.
Last two games are 2:30.
So nice.
Texas this weekend and Missouri next
week. I'm so
week.
Glad the Missouri game's on Saturday. And, you know, I'm so glad. That
can I say
on
one more thing about this? Arkansas did this to themselves because...
By losing?
You,
yes.
No. You get to choose one of your game times at home. Mm. But because you've got the ESPN Plus, SEC Network Plus deal where one home game per year, you get to control the game time, and it's going to be a stream-only deal. That was Arkansas State this year, and Sam Pittman did not like getting back from Little Rock late, and so he always wanted to play the Little Rock game early. You remember a couple of years ago when everybody was afraid that, you know, people were going to pass out from heat stroke because it was like 100 degrees, and it was, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Little Rock. Instead of moving that to night, they moved it up to noon. It'll be cooler then.
Perfect.
So they played that one at noon. He didn't like getting back from Little Rock late at night. Mm. And so, like, you know, Arkansas State this year, 4 o'clock kickoff. It ends at 7. So part of this and a lot of Arkansas scheduling problems that we talk about are self-inflicted, from whether it be playing in Arlington, playing in Little Rock, all of the different things that they've done. They've tried to untangle themselves from all of these webs that they have. And, you know, as long as the governor doesn't get involved, it looks like they're going to be, you know, detangled from Little Rock now for the foreseeable future. But, you know, so, like, again, I don't understand if you're the Razorbacks, if you're Juracek or whoever makes this decision, why you don't throw your fans a scrap here and say, hey, here's a night game for you. Yeah. Thanks for sitting through this crummy season with us.
Maybe they just want to get it over with like the rest of us.
Hey, it'll end a few hours early. A few hours earlier than we thought.
Yep.
The season's going to end. So it's going to be 2:30 next Saturday, Arkansas and Missouri. I'll tell you what I think they wanted to do. They've moved every SEC game out of the nighttime spot next week, except for the Iron Bowl. Mm. I think they're trying to push as many eyes to the Iron Bowl as they possibly can.
It's not going
to
be a good Iron Bowl.
Because it's the Iron Bowl. People don't care if it's not going to be a good Iron Bowl.
I guess the Egg Bowl is not going to be good. But I know that's Thanksgiving.
You still tune in. I think you tune in for no other reason than Alabama's a playoff hopeful. That game, the result of it's going to determine who goes to the SEC championship game. It's going to play a role in who goes to the SEC championship game. And like I said, it's the Iron Bowl. You're going to have 15 million viewers, whether or not, you know, the teams have winning records or losing records. There's still going to be a lot of people who tune into that game. And the more eyes you can funnel that way, the more it helps you. Not that Arkansas and Missouri is going to add to the grand total a whole lot, but it will add to it some.
Yeah, I was going to say, I need to check out the schedule for next week and kind of see what other SEC, because I was like, I'm trying to run through the list at the top of my head of how many of the kind of SEC finishing rivalry games are actually going to be. Okay, Texas A&M and Texas is good, but that's on Friday. The Egg Bowl is also Friday.
A few of them are before Saturday. Georgia Tech, I think, is on Friday too.
Am I an idiot? I thought the Egg Bowl was on Thanksgiving.
They've moved it all around. It's been on Thanksgiving. It's been on Saturday. It's on Black Friday now. Yeah, Black Friday, you've got Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Georgia Tech, Texas, Texas A&M. That is a really good triple header on ABC.
On Friday, yeah, that's great.
And then everything else is going to be played during the day. On Saturday, you got Clemson and South Carolina.
Oh, that's going to be something.
Kentucky and Louisville, Vanderbilt, Tennessee,
that's
LSU, and OU, Florida State and Florida, and, of course,
that's
Arkansas, Missouri.
Florida is going to be a sicko ball.
They have cleared the runway for Auburn and Alabama to be the only plane taken off Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense looking at the schedule. Yeah, that Friday, wow. I'm excited about Friday.
Yeah, that's a good day of football.
But that's the other thing. And, you know, nobody wants to hear media people complain about how hard our lives are, because they're not. But
this is Christina saying this, not me.
The hardest thing. Well, it's annoying. And one thing that I actually like about either an 11 a.m. or a 6:30 or a 6 p.m. kickoff is you get to actually watch games. Yeah. We don't get to watch. You know, you got to catch up on stuff later. You got to see highlights. You got to have some stuff on. I do a lot of, like, other games on other screens. Mm-hmm.
That I bring to the game that I can't ever figure out how to. If it wasn't for Christina, my wife got me this little screen last year. And it's not that little. I mean, it's probably about the size of a computer screen. Yeah. I can't ever figure out how to.
It's just like a monitor, and it has a stand, and I had to look up a YouTube video for how to set the stand up, because we were just like folding it around. We were in the press box just messing with it, and
we look like Zoolander when it's in the computer. It's in the computer.
But anyway, yeah, it's so I'm excited about Friday, because, you know, games on a Friday are great because I can actually watch them.
Yeah, that's a really good triple header on that Friday. I mean, all of those games have big not only SEC championship, but playoff ramifications in those games. All right, so there's a new name that was reported yesterday. Pat Fitzgerald has reportedly interviewed with Arkansas. And I would just encourage people like to read the whole story. It said with Arkansas and other teams. It's like, I think a lot of times people see this like, oh, he's interviewed with Arkansas. That's who we're hiring. This is season's done. You know, program, burn it down, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if he'll be the coach or not. We'll see. But it said Arkansas and other programs. I just think this is a coach who, you know, he got his vindication a couple, 3 months ago that basically Northwestern fired him when they shouldn't have over the whole hazing allegation that happened there 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, he's trying to get back in the game now. And again, what does communication mean? Does that mean that he's reached out to them? Does that mean that they've reached out to him? Does it mean he's interviewed?
The CBS report, did it? What language did it use? Did
it say
did it say he'd interviewed?
I think it said he had interviewed.
I think so, too, because I think that was a key distinction.
But there have been some others where I'm saying there have been some others where it says there has been communication between the sides.
Yeah, like that's a clear distinction between like that and what people were talking about with Ed Ogeron, where it was like he's had contact. And it's like, yeah, I bet he's had contact with a lot of people. He wants to coach again. That doesn't mean people want him to coach for them.
So here's a question. This is a loaded question. Who are the like let's help me with the names here.
Okay.
People who we would say are reputable, who have reported this name had contact with Arkansas.
Mm.
Okay, so where are we at? We got Pat Fitzgerald, because mm-hmm. CBS reported this. We trust Brandon and his reporting. Then Pete Nako said John Summerall from Tulane.
Yeah.
He said Brian Silverfield from Memphis. And again, I don't know if all of these have interviewed or not. It's just been like those are candidates. Alex Golish at South Florida. And
is it Eric Morris.
And I got to say Eric because I keep wanting to say Chad.
I do too. It's that would happen.
There's a Coach Morris. A Coach Morris from North Texas. That could get really confusing really quick. But Eric Morris from North Texas, who, by the way, we'll see what the playoff rankings say tonight, but they may be the team right now that
they
are the odds
American
on.
Is interesting, yeah.
Well, they're not in the American, though, are they? They're the Sun Belt.
I think, no, they're in the American.
Are they in the American?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, you're going to look this up.
American Conference standings. They're in the American.
Okay, well.
I think that's new. Okay. Because the American had some teams leave, and I think that's relatively new.
Honestly, I can't keep up with my kids day to day at North Texas conference. that's a whole other deal.
How dare that not
okay,
be
so anyway, so it sounds like they're the team, though, that mm-hmm. would be the potentially the highest rated. It's JMU who's out of the Sun Belt. That's who I'm thinking of.
Yes.
And they could be they're the other team that's challenging. So those five coaches, if you had to say right now, Arkansas's next head coach is going to be out of that group of five or the field, what do you think?
Oh boy, I think that group. I think he's.
You think
in that
group?
Yeah.
I think I would go with the field, and this is nobody telling me anything, and this is not me trying to be coy or saying, "Hey, I know more." It's none of that. It's just. I think Juracek plays his cards so close to the vest.
That's true.
That
we thought they were going to hire Darryl Walker.
You thought they were.
I mean, I don't know how much I really thought that, but it was looking like we were going that direction. So they come out with John Calipari.
You know, Pittman. I mean, again, I think that was a byproduct of some of the coaches turned them down before. Mm-hmm. I know it was. You know, they. I don't know if they got turned down or it just didn't work out with other coaches, but the point being there were other candidates before. Yeah.
And even in other sports, look at Jordan Weber.
Yeah, where
that
did she come
from?
That
came out of nowhere,
yeah.
And like, it's been fantastic.
You know who scooped that for us? It was a photographer who's sitting over here in the newsroom.
No way.
I don't know how he got it, but he got it.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
it
was pretty crazy. I just feel like, and maybe it is out of that group, you know, I mean, and it's very conceivable to think it's out of that group. But I just think about his past coaching hires and how a lot of times it's a coach that you just didn't see coming.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly possible. We're at this point with this, you know, 8 week long search where it's like we've just cycled through so many ideas and, you know, it's just hard for me to, like I said, I think my feeling is that it's from that group, but it could be somebody totally different.
Here's another question. What if they're further along in the process than people think they are?
Yeah.
You know, what if they want it being talked about, hey, you know, there's however many candidates and it could be this, it could be that. What if they've, like, What if they just surprise everybody and drop a press release on a, you know, a random Saturday night?
Yeah.
Or a Sunday afternoon?
That would be crazy. I mean, they could do it. Like, you know, I think my initial sort of thought with that was, oh, why would you do it before the season's over? But, like, Virginia Tech just did
it. They just did it
because they had their guy. You knew their interim wasn't getting the job.
I told you this earlier. I don't think Arkansas wants to be sitting there at the end of the season waiting for the dominoes to fall. Like, what happens with Lane Kiffin? You know, I tend to think Lane Kiffin's going to stay at Ole Miss because I don't think – I mean, he's got a playoff team. He's got a playoff team at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Does he really want to leave that and jeopardize that to go coach at wherever? That would surprise me if that happened. But what? But just hypothetically, what would happen if he left Ole Miss and then all the dominoes that start to fall? Yeah. Do you really want to be Arkansas there where you know that you're not going to be at the top of the pecking order when those dominoes start to fall? Or do you want to have your guy lined up, you know, when the season is?
Yeah.
Do you have an option? Maybe you do. I don't know. These are all just questions that I ask myself all the time.
Yeah. This is the circles we've been going in for so long.
Yeah.
But I had kind of been thinking, you know, why would they do it? But honestly, my thinking of why would they do it, why would they announce it before the season's over, was also when I thought Petrino would be more of a factor in the search than he has become, given just how they keep losing. I thought it would be, you know, somebody on the radio last week was asking me about, like, do you think they owe him, do they owe Petrino anything in terms of, and I was like, no.
No.
They've done so much for him.
All they owe him is $175,000
a
month.
Yeah, I was like, what are you talking about?
That's their intermittent
coach. No, what are you talking about? But I was like, they don't owe him anything. You know, they're not going to, like, treat him poorly, but I don't think it's necessarily treating him poorly if you announce your next
coach. I think
he gets
it.
Yeah, he gets it.
I think he gets it.
I think he's
been in this job long
enough. I think he's known for a little bit now that it's,
I think he knew after Mississippi State.
I think so, too.
I think there was a hope that he could get it on his end and probably on some other people's end, too. And then I think once they lost to Mississippi State the way they did, I think that, you know, he probably could see the writing on the wall at that point.
I think so, too.
We'll see. We'll see how this goes. It's I'm ready for it to end. Yeah. I know that.
That's for sure. I know. I'm like, okay, that probably this weekend and next weekend, I need to make sure I'm not, like, doing anything on, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Like, I need to be
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You
know, literally every day. Just
keep your calendar open for
times.
The next 3 weeks.
Keep the phone on you.
But I do wonder if there may be a little bit further along in this process than they want people to believe. Because it's such a crowded market that you don't want to – and that's the other thing about, you know, playing everything close to the vest. You don't necessarily want the other teams to know, you know, if you're going this direction. You don't – you might want to throw them off the scent.
Do you want me to really galaxy brain this?
Sure. If that's what you want to do.
Hunter Yurecek accepting the charge of being the new chairman of the selection committee – did he do it because he knew it wouldn't, you know, we talked last week about how that would be a really big commitment and all that stuff. Did he accept it knowing that it wouldn't be a problem because he was preparing?
Because
the dominoes were lining up and he was prepared to have it done early.
He had a verbal on
Halloween.
That's
my galaxy brain.
On Halloween. He had his verbal. Who knows? I just know I'm ready for this thing to end.
Me too.
Christine, appreciate you being here. Appreciate all of you being with us today on the show. Hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. It's back up now. Cloudflare's back up today. Thank God. Wholehogsports.com. Hope to see you there or on our show tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.